What would happen if instead of composing predetermined assignments, college composition students could compose whatever they want to compose? What would happen if students could set their own deadlines and grade their own work? Find out as Assistant Professor Mason Joyner and I explore these questions with a few of our fellow English department colleagues. I'm Monica Mankin, and this is the English 101 Experiment.
Welcome to the English 101 Experiment Podcast. My name is Mason Joyner, an assistant professor of English at Delgado Community College in New Orleans, Louisiana, and here is my co-host,
Monica Mankin, professor of English as well here at Delgado, and welcome to season 3, episode 1. Just a little, snapshot, I guess, of what you can expect this season. We're going to be walking the way, which is from a quote from the poet Rumi that we've been sort of leading off each semester with. So that's going to be kind of our theme. And we're going to focus a lot on probably generative AI and how that's fitting into our teaching now, as well as maybe how the experiment is going in asynchronous classrooms. And maybe one of the biggest features of the season that I think Mason and I are both excited about is having more students join us for these conversations. So on that note, we have one of my students from my English 110 this past summer. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I am Mo, a student here at Delgado. I am getting a degree in general studies with a concentration in psychology.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah. And how's your semester going so far?
It's going great. I'm learning a lot, staying really busy. It feels good to stay on top of my schoolwork too and not procrastinating. I remember in your class last semester, there was a long podcast that I listened to on procrastination. And that really kind of like opened my eyes a little bit, you know, how it works and
why we do it. Yeah, that's the science of procrastination, I think, is what that one's called.
Tying into your concentration of psychology, for sure.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So today we're just going to talk. We just would like to hear your account, I suppose, of walking the way. Right. So kind of thinking back to the beginning of our time in class together, maybe just start. I see you brought your journal. Right. So English teachers love to talk about classroom artifacts. So you have your class artifact with you. Do you remember? Do you want to can you go back and maybe share sort of your initial thoughts when we just began with this quotation, as you walk upon the way appears?
Yeah. So after we were presented with the quote, you asked us the question of what does this idea suggest about learning, uncertainty, or discovery? And, you know, I related that a lot to my personal life and about challenging and rethinking my old ideas and, you know, thinking back to how it was, what I was doing clearly wasn't working for me at all. I mean, my life was in shambles, you know? So looking at this quote, it just really made me think of a lot of fear that has kept me stuck in my own ways. A lot of uncertainty of the future that, you know, halted me or caused me to change my path, you know? No confidence in the way that I was walking. One of the things that I wrote was, I'm afraid of either failure or judgment or thinking that I should be farther along than I am, and that leads to beating myself up over it. And then I fear that when I start walking a new path, I will be confronted with a void of nothingness. But that's just me getting in my own way, you know? So reflecting of when I, you know, when you walk the way appears, I think of, I need to stop getting in my own way, and if I'm scared, then do it scared. Okay, so your class was my first class back in college, and I haven't been in school since 2015. I graduated high school, so it's been 10 years. So I think starting in your class, when you explain that kind of like we're gonna be in charge of our own projects and what we do, but like you'll teach us the skills to do it. That got me revved up and fired up for my education and, you know, for going back to school and being like, okay, I can do this, and having it focused more on what I'm interested in and following, you know, the guidelines or whatever, like all the things that you
or whatever.
I don't know. It was just really cool to be able to do what I'm interested in, but being able to academically challenge myself with, you know, what's expected of me in this course and the certain standards that you hold for the class and also that I hold for myself. So, yeah, that's kind of like a brief synopsis of our reflection of it. Yeah,
that that fear of walking into emptiness, or walking into nothing, is kind of a trick, right? Because the real emptiness and nothing is not walking at all,
right?
Right. There's always another step, you know, when you're walking the way.
Absolutely.
But it is, I mean, that fear is so paralyzing. Like, that's real, so real for, I think, a lot of people. You articulated that beautifully. And it's, as a, you know, as an instructor, I'm always thinking about that quotation in terms of like how the class is going to unfold. But you, it, I sometimes don't realize how personally it resonates with students. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. And you also mentioned something about that fear of failing. Which I think pretty soon after we start with this poem, we read Jack Gilbert's Failing and Flying. Can you talk a little bit about what you remember from that poem and kind of...
Oh, let me open up my trusty, my trusty journal to the page. So, let's see. So I remember talking about concrete and abstract language in that poem, which I thought was a key to understanding writing a little bit. So I thought that was really cool. And I also learned to annotate in your class, which I've always loved reading. But sometimes when I read, I can't, I don't remember what I read, or it's just like, you know, my mind's going somewhere else when I'm reading, and it's just so frustrating. But then learning to annotate a book, and it just seems like it's such an easy thing, but I never knew how to do it. So I don't know. So that's also something I took note in. But I remember putting that fear is like a closed door with a do not enter sign that you put up. So you are creating your own limitations.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's from that exercise we did where I give you the abstraction of the emotion. Fear is like, anger is like, love is like, and then we work on like filling in the blank with something concrete.
Moving abstract to concrete.
No, I wish I had the poem in front of me.
I know, I don't, I,
you know, there are,
I'm like, what is this handout in my journal?
A few lines of that poem I find that are always kind of stumping, not only for students, for me, particularly the one about like the people who say
Provence.
They liked Provence, but the food was greasy.
Right.
Or, and then also that in that parenthetical Provence when it was
when it
Provence.
Was, yeah.
Provence. And yeah, I mean, there are no clean answers to really, especially the when it was Provence. That's one that I really can't find a clean thing to point to and say, this is what he's saying.
See, for me, that's where I feel like it does. There is a little moment of clarity there because it's sort of about this idea of the golden era of something. And so there's this like sort of idealized version or this time when Provence was like the place to be, and it felt so like maybe like paradise and perfection, and it was beautiful, and maybe the food wasn't greasy then, right? Like, and so, yeah, I feel like it's just kind of reinforcing that idea of things not, of coming to an end, right? That good things come to an end. There's a kind of a cycle, and that if we only, if we focus on the ending as a failure instead of like, just like as the end of that poem says, the end of a triumph, right? So I, I don't know. I guess that's how I interpret it. I don't know if that's even remotely correct.
That sounds good.
It does. I can only imagine, you know, when I, if I set out on a task thinking I'm going to fail or that's going to be my end goal of failure, you know, like then how much effort am I really going to put into it? You know, it's like not enjoying the process and just, you know, falling in that like, fear that's not even real. It's like false experiences appearing real, you know, and you might fail, you know, at something. I mean, you're bound to fail at some things, but it's all about like experience learned and how you grow from it and where you go from there.
Yeah.
You know, I recently had a test that I forgot about because I didn't write it down in my planner.
Yeah.
And I was beating myself up so bad about it. But instead, like, I just took a note in my planner to, like, take note, like put in my planner when you have a test and use this as a lesson, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. for next time yeah. instead of, like, beating myself up over failures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a Samuel Beckett quote floating around the office a few years ago, I think. Fail again, fail better.
Mm-hmm.
Which just, yeah, everything you do, fail. You know, I think that's kind of a fun lens to look through.
Yeah. Well, because then how do you know when you're successful?
Yeah.
You know, how do you recognize that?
Yeah. How does anyone really measure success?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, is it through material things or through, you know, spiritual success or on this, like, different altruistic plane? You know, it's hard to really judge success.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know? Part of what I love about that poem, Failing and Flying, is that, you know, every success, every triumph comes to an end. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean it wasn't a triumph.
Right.
Just because it ended.
Right.
Every star burns out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like when one story ends, another begins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so is it the end all be all? No.
Of course not. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're going to keep on going.
So we also spent some time imitating that poem. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us just a little bit about your experience with imitation, what that was like for you? And
So I remember reading the poem and, yeah, you explained what imitation was. And I was trying to think of a story or a historical figure or something that's kind of been through that same process or it was the same, like, failing and flying. And I was thinking, or I thought about the story of Sisyphus, mm-hmm. You know, rolling the boulder mm-hmm. up the hill and just never getting to the top and keep, like, you know. And I also, it was very personal for me also. And so I related it to that. And I wrote a poem about, you know, my own struggles with addiction. And, you know, when I was stuck in it, it was like I was trying to roll the boulder up the hill, you know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know why I kept failing. And I, you know, I was just beating myself up. And just staying, you know, not even trying to get over the mountaintop. I was just staying in this, like, prison that I've created for myself mm-hmm. in my own mind, you know. It was a really, really dark place. But after thinking about it and, you know, reflecting on it more, and I think, yeah, it was really cool. I mean, the reflection of that and then also having the freedom to kind of pick who I want to pick or do what I want to do in the, you know... within, like, the standard that you're creating for the class, it was really cool, you know, being able to relate it to my own personal experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things we love about it is the freedom to be creative within the given parameters.
We just finished actually this semester. We just wrapped up that exercise. Cool. And again, like, so many good poems, and I think that energy of, like, oh, I did it. I never wrote a poem before, but I did it. And
And I remember the start of Failing and Flying, it started with a question. So I remember you said kind of imitate it, maybe start it with a question to keep the reader engaged, or, like, with each line that someone reads, it mm-hmm. makes you want to read more. And I thought that was really cool, kind of how to form a poem or different styles of writing to mm-hmm. kind of keep the reader engaged, and what's your tone and style and who are you speaking to and all that. I thought that was the coolest thing because I didn't know that, you know, being a poet or a writer involved this much, you know, thought when it just comes to, like, the simple of, like, mm-hmm. style and tone. And, you know, I thought it was really, really cool.
So how did that help you, that these things that you're talking about that kind of came out of this imitation exercise and some of the other texts that we looked at and talked about, style and tone? How do you feel like that prepared you or supported you in your project, which you can tell us a little bit about what your project was, but which was definitely more academic in nature than a lot of the creative stuff we were doing at the beginning of our time together? How did that stuff help you with your project?
Well, one, I was thinking of how to keep the listener engaged because I did a podcast.
Cool.
And I was thinking, you know, like at the beginning of each podcast, I kind of started with a question to make the listener kind of think and be like, oh, I wonder, like, what do I think about this? And then sort of like go into some like academic stuff. But also I related some personal experience to that as well. And I don't know. And then just talking about like the elements of style. So when it talks about dictation and sentence length and the concretion or point of view, and then when it goes into Latinate and
your diction choices.
Yes. Yeah. And Germanic. So it's like, you know, what's my emotional quality and the attitude towards the subject. And then all the like metaphors versus similes and narrations and examples. Like, I don't know. All of that really made me think of things that I've read before, whether it be creative narratives or academic research or even podcasts. And I kind of started to think of like, okay, what they're saying is cool, but how this person is saying it got me interested. And like, I wonder why they chose that route. And mm-hmm. I wonder why they chose, you know, that tone or punctuation or whatever. And it's cool to like understand the meaning of it. Mm-hmm. Or like why some, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I guess one of the things I'm curious about, which isn't so specifically about your project, but maybe like our workshop process, and how that, like how being able to see what other people were doing and give feedback and get feedback. Like how did you feel about that? How did you respond to that? Did you find it helpful? Is there anything that you think could be done better with that approach?
I loved that process. It was really cool hearing people, you know, talk about why they chose to do that, or just because some of them were personal, that some people did. And it was cool to like to see more about their life or to hear more about their life. And then also just to have this sort of like respectful but constructive criticism on some of the things. And then it just being a healthy environment between students to talk about, you know, well, I would have liked to heard this or to hear this, but I think this is great and you should keep this. And then also asking questions as to like why you chose to add that in there or say that. I don't know. I thought it was really, really cool. I don't know if I would change anything. I think I would have enjoyed for it to be a bigger class.
Yeah, we did have a small class.
Well, it's summer, so, you know.
Which I think in a way actually allowed us more time to really engage with each other. When you have 25, you know, 27 students, like in the fall, we usually have a lot bigger classes. It does get harder. We don't have as much time to spend on everybody's work. So there was a benefit. But I know what you mean, because then it's more perspectives, more voices involved in that conversation.
And I mean, some of the students in that class, I, you know, their work was great. And the way, you know, how poetic they sounded with, and it's just like you would never expect that, you know. But I think, you know, giving someone the freedom to choose what they want to write about or how they want to write or if they want to do a podcast or a YouTube video or like whatever, it's, you know, giving students the freedom to do that, for me, it got me really excited to do it, you know. And as soon as you mentioned, you know, how we can decide what we want to do for the project, I immediately thought about what I want to do for a career. So I thought that this would be the perfect opportunity to kind of look into that a little bit more and kind of do research on it. And then just some students, like, reflecting on their life. And there was one that did a narrative from the point of view of a pond.
It was cool.
And it was beautiful writing. And it was, I mean, it was incredible.
Definitely. Surprising, though, too, right? Especially, I guess, the student who did that, I think.
I want that in it. Let's get that in our student magazine.
In the showcase? So can you tell, what's the title of your podcast?
My podcast is called Breaking the Boulder. So I used the imitation assignment that you gave us. And the poem that I wrote is called Breaking the Boulder. And, you know, the theme of the poem is, you know, me talking about my struggles with addiction and, you know, breaking out of those chains and breaking the boulder, you know. So I decided to, you know, turn a podcast into that. And in one of the bonus episodes of the podcast, I speak the poem. I don't know how to.
Cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was cool. It was a little bonus episode.
Awesome.
And, yeah, but the podcast, it was really, really cool because, you know, the podcast, it's about, you know, addiction and recovery. And it's also about, you know, certain stigmas that are behind addiction and how it's portrayed in media and film and all of this stuff. So it was cool to dive into that and talk about it, but also have this personal experience. And with the fact of, you know, I don't look like, you know, an alcoholic or an addict that, you know, you might see on TV. I don't really know what you would think of when you think of the typical alcoholic, but I know that I didn't think that I was one because I had, you know, a good job and a good house and all this stuff. And, you know, it wasn't what I thought a person struggling with addiction looked like, solely based on the way that it was portrayed in film and TVs and the stigmas behind this thing and, you know, what I've heard about it. Yeah, starting this podcast, I kind of wanted to just dive into that a little bit. And also with other people that, you know, are struggling like I was struggling, it's kind of, I think it's good to, you know, have this thing that we don't really talk about a whole lot and talk about it and humanize it and, like, normalize it a little bit. Yeah. And I know it's, like, a shameful thing and people don't want to talk about it, but I'm at the point now where, you know, I'm not ashamed of it. And the struggles that I've gone through have led me to this point now. And, I mean, I just think it's a beautiful thing, you know, the process of being, like, you know, reborn and, like, recreating myself and having this drive, you know, and going back to school and having this, like, passion for education like I've never had before. I'm being so excited to learn and, you know, do things that I didn't even think were possible. You know, and because I was, like, just stuck in these, like, mental shackles.
I really love that breaking the boulder, right? The boulder is addiction. The boulder is our ideas of what addiction looks like, breaking that, breaking the stigma around addiction, breaking the silence around addiction. I mean, a very cool metaphor that I feel like,
And I just love, like, the continuity of, like, the poem getting kind of rolled into this bigger project.
Awesome.
Beautiful. It's very exciting to watch that process unfold. What is something that, I guess, like, what is something that surprised you, like, through the process? Like, what surprises did you encounter about yourself or about doing a project like a podcast or even about writing, like something that surprised you?
Well, I never thought that I could do it. You know, I had a lot of fear, especially when I decided to do a podcast. I remember, you know, calling my friends and family and being like, I don't know why I committed to doing something like this. Like, I'm not capable of doing it. I want to do something else. And that kind of goes back to, you know, reflecting on Rumi's quote, you know, when you walk the way appears, and about how I'm the only one getting in my own way with this stuff. And it was so cool because, you know, I was scared and fearful and I didn't want to do it. And I wanted to turn back and do something else that seemed a little bit more plausible for me to do. But instead of doing that, you know, I stuck with it. I dedicated time to it. You know, I set time aside every single day to work on this thing and do research for each of the episodes and play around with recording and audio, so see what sounds good. And it's just a lot that went into it that I didn't think I was capable of even doing, you know, because I've put so many limitations on myself in the past, like so many, you know, and that's just, I don't want to live like that anymore.
Yeah.
So finally, like, breaking that boulder and you know, being scared but doing it scared, like, the way appears, you know? It's, oh, it's It's such a magical process in my eyes, and it's crazy, you know, because before when I was in school, like, I barely graduated high school with a 2.0, and I didn't care about an education at all. I didn't know why I was doing it. I wasn't interested in it. I didn't understand the value. Mm-hmm. I was more into, you know, having friends and, you know, doing, like, extracurricular stuff. So, I mean, even going to school was, like, a huge fear of mine. And your class being the first class that that I went to when I got back to school, and just, like, having this free reign to do what I wanted and also learn these, like, techniques mm-hmm. and style when it comes to writing and recording, it was just a great start for me to kick off my, you know, my school career and my education. So, yeah. So, I was definitely... just fear that I wasn't able to do it, that I wasn't going to be able to pass the class, that I wasn't going to be able to turn in assignments on time or show up, or, you know, that mm-hmm. I was just going to decide not to go halfway through the semester and that was going to be it, you know? Yeah. But then it's just like every single day, just taking action into that better life that I want for myself. Mm-hmm. And then seeing the results is crazy, you know? Yeah. Who thought when you just take action, there's results?
And seeing where you've gotten.
Yeah.
I think I have a question for you, Monica, sort of on this note, because it's been on my mind this week. Mm-hmm. Do you ever, because we're walking away, right, in this English 101 experiment, do you ever still feel that fear and that panic of, like, turning back and going back to...
An old way?
An older way.
Or just turning away?
Turning away from the experiment?
No. Only because the quality of the experience with students feels so meaningful.
And
I think the engagement is different now. And so even if it's like something feels like a struggle and it feels like it might be easy to just like fall back on some old, it does, like, to me, that just feels like, I don't know. It's not the right answer. I don't know if that's
a good answer.
that's helpful.
I sort of that set in for me a little bit this week.
How so?
Well, just you know, that same old concern that keeps coming back, and we've talked about it plenty of times. But, you know, other teachers, other institutions looking at our experiment, and seeing that perhaps, you know, are we letting down the students? Are we not bringing students up to a certain, to the standard?
Oh, you mean because we're not grading 5,000 written words in a traditional academic paper?
Yeah, well, of course. Rationally, I believe in that. I believe in what we're doing. But I still feel, you know, every now and then that fear to turn back and not continue on the way.
Yeah, which, you know, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. There, I think there is a lot of pressure on people in our position. And I mean, I understand the importance of, like, a common experience, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that if anyone actually looked at how much writing you actually did in the class in order to produce your podcast, right? Like, how much can you tell it? How much writing did you do? Well,
it was a lot. It was a lot of writing, a lot of typing scripts. Lot of this work I did on my laptop too, and it was a lot. And I will say, so in my English class now, it's so cool because I'm able to kind of add my personality to, like, new things that I'm writing, or just I can write about something that I'm passionate about, like, within, you know, the scope of what my teacher wants me to do. And it's really cool. And, you know, I don't think I would have, if I didn't take your class, and if, you know, I just did, like, a traditional English 1 class, I don't think, you know, I don't know what would happen. But with my experience now with taking your class, it helped me learn more about me and learn more about what style I prefer, and make me learn more about, you know, these, like, these different facets of, you know, explaining or portraying how you're feeling or the emotion of what you're saying. I mean, I learned a lot in your class, like a lot, you know, and I don't know. I prefer that. If I could take every single class to where, you know, I could learn how to write, but then write what I want to write about within, you know, the standards that are given, like I would choose that over anything.
Cool. Yeah.
And I guess like to kind of follow up. So I guess to be clear, mm-hmm. do you feel like you were prepared for what you're doing now through this course? Do you feel like it prepared you for writing in other classes?
Yes. And it helped me a lot with how to research also, because I did a lot of research for the podcast mm-hmm. and for the class that I'm in. There's a few research papers that we have to do. So now I know, you know, what to look for, what kind of articles, you know, and which one. I also learned how to use the Delgado academic database,
yeah.
which is really cool. And yeah, I definitely think it prepared me in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Well, that's good, because yeah, I know yeah. that is something that we've struggled with as we've been mm-hmm. doing this experiment, is like making sure that students are leaving feeling prepared for
yeah.
what comes next, even though we are not being very traditional
yeah.
in our approach. any other questions or thoughts?
You know, when I journaled on this quote with my class, I think last week, a phrase that I wrote down then and that came back to me now is this semester in particular, in comparison to what we did last semester, maybe the semester before, I'm trying to walk more blindly, mm-hmm. I guess, this semester. And I wrote down, Mo, what you said, doing it scared. I like, yeah, I'm kind of walking a little bit more scared mm-hmm. this time.
Like, how so? Can you explain that a little bit more?
You know, I think in the past, I will just, my personality type is one to stick to a schedule that I've set, you know,
mm-hmm.
and being a little bit more forgiving of myself for, okay, you know what, we're going to push that down and we're going to do this next week.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess being more responsive rather than, you know, rigid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I also kind of thought about is, you know, when I walk the way appears, and when I try to control my life or try to, you know, carve exactly what path I'm going to go down,
mm-hmm.
when it defers a little bit, it's like I lose my mind and I start spiraling, because it's not exactly what I want to do and the time frame I want to do it and like blah, 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 blah. But it's like letting go of control and mm-hmm. just taking whatever comes at me and just blindly walking, but, you know, having faith that it's going to turn out all right.
Yeah.
Or even if it doesn't, and when I fail, like learn from that failure and then maybe do something different.
Right.
And like, you know, the old ways that I was living before obviously weren't working out, you know, so it's like just do something different.
Yeah.
Or just take what comes at you. And keep pushing the boulder, guys.
Yeah, keep pushing it.
And break it. Break the boulder.
Because we did talk about generative AI.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little bit of experimenting with that. What are your thoughts about generative AI? And did you find it helpful at all in your process or not?
I did find it helpful. You know, doing a podcast, I had no idea how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, asking AI to kind of help me with an outline or tell me what's the process to even start this thing. I mean, that information was vital for me going into this. And also sometimes with AI, I would ask a question and just kind of get a different perspective. But I also want to keep my, you know, integrity with this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I appreciate AI when it's used the right way and when it's just needed, you know, just to get information on how to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely don't want it to, you know, take over my, like, academic writings. You know, I still want to have that, like, personality when it comes to my writing. And so, yeah, but it is, I do think that it's a really useful tool when used mm-hmm. correctly. But it can be abused a lot of the time.
Yeah,
sure.
Easy to abuse mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah. Like, what helped you from our class before we even started getting into, using AI and kind of testing out its value and its limitations, what tools from our class, I suppose, inspired you to want to maintain your own voice and your integrity?
I think, you know, just with stories I've heard before about students being in school and just using AI to get by, and then they get out in the real world and they're just like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah.
So that, I mean, just that alone, like I went into class kind of, you know, thinking that. And, you know, I think it might be easy to get by with AI, but, you know, when my English teacher now says that she has an AI, you know, a lot of classes, they have AI checkers, and they even make it a point, you know, not to use AI and to keep, you know, your integrity. And I don't know, I just, and with the class, before we even started talking about generative AI, I thought it was just really brilliant also reading these poems written before AI was even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's possible for you to have this like creative outlet in this poetic way of writing and talking without, you know, needing artificial help to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just like, that's what I want. And that's the kind of education that I want. But asking AI for help, like I said, it is useful. But, you know, and watching like videos, even on procrastination or like TED Talks or whatever, like, I don't think, I don't know. It's just like there's this personal element that's attached to people's writings and videos and music. And I just think that that's something I don't want to lose touch of and that I'm terrified of it. So I kind of had this like view of it going in. And even when things get hard and academically challenging, you know, sometimes it's hard to push through, but it's so rewarding in the end. And knowing that I didn't use AI, it's so cool. But I did think it was interesting when we were talking about AI, the response from AI is different depending on you being polite to it. Like, hey, good morning, I have a question. I was like, that's crazy.
It's almost like to what you're saying about reading those poems and seeing the human voice at work. It's once you buy into the idea that you can create something beautiful with your words, and I think maybe that buy-in is a big obstacle for a lot of people going into this process. That just the idea that they can create something beautiful with their words. But once you do buy into that, it's like, of course you want to chase it, I think.
I think so. And I think it's that hurdle, and I think it connects to what you've been talking about, Mo, is that fear that I can't do it.
Right.
I can't. And that's what pushes people to over-rely, or even just give their creativity away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because now there's this tool that can do it for me, you know, and it's... It's, you know, a lot of these things that seem easy at first end up being hard in the long run, or end up falling apart, or, you know, because imagine if you use AI in your whole, you know, scholastic career, and then 5 years down the road, you know, someone wants you to, like, write this huge paper, like, right in front of them, or make a speech or whatever, and it's just, like, they value you so much because your writing is so great, but it's, like, I didn't write it,
but
and a computer did. Mm-hmm. It's crazy, you know. But I've heard that you know, the hard things, like, it ends up being easier in the long run. You just have to put in that like effort and that perseverance at first, but then it's all worth it, you know. It's like I read this book, Atomic Habits, and the author I think is Adam Grant, who actually he did that video on procrastination, right?
Yeah, I think it is Work Life with Adam Grant, and that's The Science of Procrastination is that podcast. Mm-hmm. There was also another one, Breaking Up with Perfectionism, but I think that's a different person who hosts
that. Yeah, it was a different person, but that one was really good too. But now he says in the book something about, you know, it's like taking the easy way out. Like, yeah, it's easy, instant gratification, using AI, like, whatever, you know, you don't have to do a lot of work and you get rewarded instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the long run, like, it's just gonna create more problems and more difficulty and more stress.
Kicking the can down the road.
Yeah. But like if you start out with doing the hard things that you might not want to do, but like you know it's best for you, but it's just like it's hard. You know, who wants to do something hard? You know, but
what was the book called? Atomic Habits.
Okay. But I know it ends up being great. You know, it's kind of like getting sober. Like I didn't want to get sober, and the easy thing to do, you know, when I was stressed or anxious or whatever, was to drink. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was just my easy way out every single time. And it was fun at first, but then the long-term results, it was pitiful, you know. Mm-hmm. It was incomprehensible. It was horrible, yeah. You know. But then, like, the process of getting sober was hard. Mm-hmm. Like, it was hard at first, you know. But now, like, in the long run, I feel like life is, you know, so much easier now. And I don't know. And that's the beauty of it. So now it's like I know that I can do hard things. Mm-hmm. I did what arguably the hardest thing for me to do, which was to get sober. And it's like if I can do that, then, you know, then I want to, like, put this effort into everything I do when it comes to, like, academically and just lifestyle-wise. And I don't know.
Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah. What a great just like a message to oneself that you can do hard things.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm.
I've done something hard. Mm-hmm. I can do hard things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Well, do you have any advice for students who might be coming into a course like ours? Because Mason and I both have the same approach. Any advice that you would give them for how to, I don't know. I don't want to say how to be successful, but just maybe I'm just going to end with, do you have any advice for students that might be coming into our course?
Things to know.
What's important for students to know?
I mean, I would say just to go in open-minded and, you know, challenge your old ideas and be open to rethinking and, you know, be open to trying something new. And if it doesn't work out, then do something else. But also, like, get excited for your education because it's such a beautiful thing, you know, because you're in school for you at the end of the day. And it's just cool, you know. I feel like the purpose of school is to help you develop critical thinking, or the purpose of this class, just critical thinking and, I don't know, just sort of, like, shaping your thoughts and, like, making them bigger and being able to think deeper and, you know, not being just so stuck in your old ways. Because when you're coming into college for the first time, it's like I had no idea what I was in for or what kind of work this entailed or whatever. But just, like, being open to it and learning and then asking questions, too, because you always ask every single question that I had. And you, you know, and it's just, like, I feel like teaching, like what you guys are doing, is like, it's amazing, you know? And especially for a student like me, having a teacher that's passionate about, you know, wanting the students to learn and creating these different facets of, like, you know, I think it's really cool. So my advice would just be keep an open mind, ask questions, and do your best and get excited and get pumped up.
Yeah.
Because this is some pretty cool stuff. Well, some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. That's my favorite one. Get excited.
Get excited. Like
that. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's fun.
Yeah. You know, one more aspect of this Rumi quote that I really like the idea of is that when, you know, as you walk on the way appears, really implies that if you don't walk on the way, the way doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. In order for the path to exist, it must be walked. And Ethan Hawke in a TED talk that we also incorporate.
Right.
In the
Give
class,
yourself permission to be creative.
Yes. He puts it this way. There is no path until you walk it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great paraphrase, right? Yes. Like, yeah. All right. Well, I think we both really appreciate you joining us to tell us about your journey.
Thank you, Mo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
thank you so much, Mo. And I hope you have a great semester and keep us posted.
I'll definitely come and check in with you guys. Yeah. Thank you so much for asking me.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. All right. And thank you, listener.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the English 101 Experiment. Special thanks to Christopher Nicotera, instructor of music business at Delgado Community College, for his recording assistance. All music heard during this episode comes from the Free Music Archive. Specific titles and artists are listed on the English 101 Experiment website.